So the meeting of the Josephine County Rural, Board of Commissioners will be conducted according to the Josephine County Land Use Hearing Rules as they apply to legislative actions. A summary of these rules is as follows. Number one, the planning staff will identify and explain the laws and procedures governing this action. Number two, if you believe any of the laws or procedures cited are not identified, followed, or correctly applied, you must raise the issue to the chair for a ruling. Clearly raise a legal or procedural issue in order to be understood by the board, and participants will prevent a later appeal. Prevents a later appeal of that action. And item number three, all participants are free to express their views about whether the proposed legislation is good policy or appropriate use of county resources. Item number four, any person who participates in this hearing may receive mailed notice of the board's final decision by requesting the notice in writing. Item number five, participants are obliged to know and follow the rules and procedures. The planning staff present has a copy of the rules. The first item on the agenda was previously read already, the item of why we're here. Does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the board to hear this matter? So that's out to you guys. Wow, there's quite a crowd. There's still some seats available. In church growing up, we had this thing, SOS, scoot over some. So if you wouldn't mind, for those of you who are in the chairs, if you could just scoot to the middle, that'll provide chairs on the outside for people. So if there's a chair in between you and the person to your right or left, please utilize it and scoot in. Let you do that because there's people standing in the back and there are seats available for those who choose to sit down and utilize those. So scoot one way or the other. That'd be great. Thank you so much. We'll all fit in here. I've had a whole lot more people in here than this. Probably not legal, but still the same. Still on item number seven, does anybody object to the jurisdiction of the Board of Commissioners to hear this matter? Hearing none. Any members of the board wish to abstain from this matter? Did you have a question?
It is not an objection, but I would like to question, but because I don't know, how regulation could be imposed upon patented lands?
It's a really good question, and our councils in the audience.
And I would find it incumbent that that this information be found out. I really think that's important.
Okay, we will look into that. We may not have an answer for you right now, but okay. We'll get one.
But if it's found that, thank you.
Yep, we'll work on that. I think Councillor Hicks heard the question. Patented land, do you want to talk about it or do it later? Okay, great. Any board member wish to object from participating?
No, thank you.
Great. So the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code sets the following time limits for testimony. Participants are, the staff report will be item number one, and then participants will be item number two. A is questions of staff, 5 minutes, and item number three, comments from the public, 5 minutes. So you'll each be provided 5 minutes to address after the staff report and questions of the board and giving directions. So just so you're aware of that, you'll just need to raise your hand and kind of let us know where you reside. Not the specific street address, just the general locale is just fine. The laws and procedures, item number nine, the laws and procedures applicable to the legislative item shall be presented by the planning staff as part of the staff report. And we have Ms. Smeltzer to provide that. So before you get up, Ms. Smeltzer, there was something I wanted to say to kind of set the tone for the meeting here. This process is probably a little bit out of the ordinary and was started by a previous board. So I was on that board, but these two members were not. They charged our planning staff with trying to come up with some legal recommendations that we could amend our code by. The Rural Land Development Code is the land use code that governs everybody in Josephine County. And from that previous board standpoint, there were some deficits created when Measure 91 and legislative item number 3400 were enacted in Oregon as a result of Measure 91 passing. And some challenges arose for land use issues in Josephine County. So the Board of Commissioners really didn't set out too specific of a charge to our planning director. I think in hindsight, if I would have done this a little bit different. I would have requested maybe we come back, have some refined discussion as just part of a board workshop, codify those elements that we wanted to move forward in an ordinance, refer those to the Rural Planning Commission, and then come back to us today. That didn't happen. So I'll just ask for everybody's patience in what's being presented here today. What's being presented doesn't necessarily mean exactly what we're going to either move forward. The board has the option to move nothing forward, move everything forward exactly how it is, or change the proposal and then move that forward. So there's actually a lot of breadth of options here. And all of those options, I believe, would be referable to the voters either by this body or yourselves. So it's kind of a long, sometimes cumbersome process. So don't think that this is going to be an end-all, be-all today. Just ask for, again, your patience in this process. We're just trying to figure out a way to see how we can refine things a little bit here in Josephine County to make it obvious, hopefully better for everybody. So is there anything that the board wanted to add?
I would just ask that everybody try to be respectful of anyone else testifying. And it may not represent what you feel as they're saying it, but we're going to give everybody an equal chance to share. And there's no decision being made today as far as this is law today. Everything that we're doing is to gather information, to get feedback, and we truly are grateful for you all showing up here today, but we also insist, please, be kind to each other, and we'll be able to get through this much quicker.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, I'd just like to add to that. This was handed to us for Commissioner Morgan and myself. We've read and read and read and read, and we've received emails and all kinds of stuff. But we're interested in what you have to say. That's what we're here for today.
Great. All right. I think that pretty much sets it. So, Ms. Meltzer?
Bear with me because our slideshow doesn't work the way we had hoped. But my name is Julie Schmelzer. I'm the Director of Community Development for Josephine County. And I just want to go through, this is going to be a pretty lengthy slideshow here. We have about 52 slides. It's necessary to set the stage so everybody understands what authority we have, why we're doing what we're doing, and then the details involved in each of the decisions. Okay, first of all, there's been some question as to what we're doing, why we're doing it, so just a little background real quick. Zoning was set in the 1920s by then Secretary Herbert Hoover, and the purpose of zoning is they set the standard saying such regulations shall be made in accordance with a comprehensive plan, which we have here in Josephine County, and designed to lessen congestion in the streets.
Smelter, I apologize.
Yeah.
The gentleman who just put the cell phone up there, you're going to have to turn that light off. I don't mind if you record this, but that light is really not pleasant to look at and distracting from whatever Ms. Schmelzer is saying. So it's okay.
Okay. Such regulation shall be made in accordance with a comprehensive plan and designed to lessen congestion in the streets, to secure safety from fire, panic, and other dangers, to promote health and the general welfare, to provide adequate light and air, to prevent the overcrowding of land, to avoid undue concentration of population, to facilitate the adequate provisions of transportation, water, sewage, schools, parks, and other public requirements. Such regulations shall be made with reasonable consideration, among other things, to the character of the zoning district and its peculiar suitability for particular uses, and with a view to conserving the value of buildings and encouraging the most appropriate use of land throughout the municipality. So based on that, zoning was created in the United States. For Josephine County, we developed subdivision regulation in 1958, and as a county, we adopted zoning in 1973. That zoning code had many different aspects to it. At one point, it did have, actually when it was created, we had a violation section. I bring this out to you because I know this has been an issue in some of the letters, but we did have a violation process at that time. Purpose of the Rural Land Development Code, which it becomes important here. What we're doing is we're discussing amendments to the Rural Land Development Code. This is not an ordinance in front of us right now. These are proposed text amendments. If you decide to move any of it forward, that then would move forward in the form of an ordinance. But right now, we are just talking about proposed text amendments to the Rural Land Development Code. And basically, when you look at the purpose of the code, it is to guide and manage the future growth of the county in accordance with the comprehensive plan, to protect public health, safety, and welfare, and to assist the public in identifying the codes. That's why we have the Rural Land Development Code. And therefore, when we're talking about proposed text amendment, we have to keep these things in mind. What is the purpose of the code when we look at these proposed text amendments? SB 1598 allows a county to set reasonable regulations on marijuana. A lot of people say, why are you picking on marijuana? It's because the state says that we can have specific regulations to marijuana, and they don't allow us to do that with other farm crops, but they do allow us by state code to do it specific to marijuana. Sorry, I told you this was kind of goofy today. So Commissioner Hare had mentioned the June 8th order or directive from the board, and it was to the planning director. She was authorized to initiate an application for review of proposed text amendments that provide for regulation of marijuana production in rural residential zones, which shall include but not be limited to setback and fence height requirements. And that is basically what set the stage for us today. That is what gave me the order to move forward and start developing those proposed text amendments, which we're going to talk about. So just a little background. There were four town hall meetings last summer. That marijuana was discussed, marijuana regulation was discussed. We heard a lot of things at those town halls. One was basically medical marijuana is necessary. We kept hearing that over and over. Support the small farmer. They want to allow it in their backyard. There was concerns about lights. There was a myriad of things brought up at those town halls, but basically it was pretty much saying don't regulate us. There wasn't very much what I felt was constructive comments at those town hall meetings. But we did receive a number of complaints. They were either by phone or by email or in writing, and they addressed such things as odor and nausea, fences, safety, concern over no licenses, water uses, and raw sewage, NIMBYism, basically people didn't want marijuana in their backyards. And then one of the big complaints we got was about compounds, which are camping establishments. We started seeing more this year, I think, than we have in the past, probably due to the guards that were occurring on some of the marijuana farms. But compounds are basically a general problem in Josephine County, regardless of the marijuana industry. So with odor and the right to farm, a lot of the complaints were about odor, and we as a county are very limited in what we can do regarding odor. There is a right to farm law that said basically that a county cannot regulate odor and noise, for example, in a farm zone. So when we started working on these rules, we kept that in mind. I will say that now, since we got into this, we became aware that the state now does allow a county to regulate odor and noise in a farm zone. That's not reflected in these proposed amendments because these were crafted before we became aware of that new law. So as I said, fences was a big concern for us. What we have seen is a lot of fences, some of them are made out of tarps, temporary materials. Not all of them are made out of wood. We've seen some made out of root balls, downed trees, stacked appliances, and stacked junk cars. So there became quite a myriad of fence composition issues out there, and we received a lot of complaints about those fences. Safety became a big thing. It was how do you protect the crop was one of the issues, and then also from the neighbors with concerns over guns and vicious dogs and trespassing. Another concern that was brought up to us was the concern that people questioned whether people had their license from OLCC or their approval from OMMP. There was concern over water and waste. Those were three things that really are out of our jurisdiction. For
or
recreational,
under or
those
not.
Like, pardon me?
Could you? I couldn't tell if you said are under our jurisdiction or are not.
Are not. Are not. The licenses come from the state. Although we do regulate water to a certain extent in the code, we do not for the aspect of water rights and water on crops. That's regulated by the state. And then with the waste as well, that's a DEQ matter. So we did receive a lot of complaints, but our hands are a little are tied on those. Sorry, my battery. I think my battery's dying here. Where's
Wendy? Do you
have
the keyboard?
I do, but you know, here, the keyboard, you have to hold it up to do it. There. So compounds, like I said, became a big issue. We receive a lot of complaints about compounds. Basically, a compound is where you have a conglomeration of campers out there. They also are the most difficult to regulate and the most difficult to get compliance on. Most of the compounds we're working on have been in excess of 6 months, and we haven't really seen any movement as far as people removing those campers or cleaning up the site that they were on. So when we began looking at these, we started to say, you know, we looked at the numbers at that time and said, where are we seeing most of the licenses, or where is the activity? And what we were able to do is we have no access to the medical marijuana records, but we do of the OLCC records. And we could look at where the land use compatibility statements had been submitted for. And just to back up a little bit, a land use compatibility statement is a form that the state requires to say that what the grower wants to do is allowed in that zoning district. It doesn't mean they meet code. It just says it's allowed in that district where the property is located. So when I was given this charge, as of June 8th, we had the majority of the LUCs that we had submitted were either in the exclusive farm zone or in the RR5 zone or in the woodlot resource zone. So those were kind of the three that we kind of honed in on and looked a little closer at as we started initially looking at the rules.
Ms. Schmelzer, real quick, those are our dominant three zones, though, right? So you wouldn't expect it to be in Serpentine or limited development, because we have very limited zones of those capacities.
Right. There's not a lot of land in the Serpentine zone.
That's
You're right.
Point.
That is a very
everything
small zone.
Everything is in EFU, woodlot resource,
right,
or RR.
Right.
Big surprise.
So, just hope I didn't miss something here. I did. Again, I'm so sorry. That's need our tech guy here. Okay, so the next thing we looked at was basically the stats on where are people that apply for these LUCs and actually get the license from the state, where are they being located, what zones are they in, and do they live here or do they live outside of the area? And basically what we found was in the RR5 zone and the EF zone, we were finding that sometimes about 50% of the license holders actually do not even live in Josephine County. So we were seeing a mix of people that actually own the land and then a lot of people that were just investing in the land but did not live here. Just going to move on to the purpose of the rural residential zone. The purpose of the rural residential zone is to preserve the rural character of the county while providing areas for rural residential living. And the zone provides for a classification for lands already committed to residential development. I bring that up to you because the charge was primarily looking at that rural residential zone. And when we look at the rural residential zone and the intent based on this, it is to keep the land residential. So that we kept that in mind as we proceeded to create the draft amendments that we're going to be discussing. So the proposed amendments, we have some that will apply to all zones. They are fencing, lighting, plant setbacks, camping, soil runoff enforcement, and definitions. And then we have some proposed text amendments we're going to talk about that apply just to the residential zones, and those are plant setbacks, dwelling first, impervious surface limits, odor, waste, and noise. So with that, I'm going to get started with the ones that would be allowed in all zones. So first of all, we're going to talk about fences. So the state, OLCC, currently started out by requiring an 8-foot-high fence for security reasons. With that, we began to see all the tarps popping up, some wooden fences. They now have amended it to allow chain-link fences, but that's a very recent amendment. As of, for most of 2016, the requirement was a site-obscuring fence. State building code says that if you have a site-obscuring fence over 7 feet, it needs a permit and must be engineered. Current county code says if you have a site-obscuring fence over 7 feet, it requires a permit, and it must meet setbacks. Basically, typically what that means is 10 feet from a side property line. We're proposing four additions, which you have read, and they are, one, that the fence be a solid, muted, earth tone color. There are waivers available for that. No temporary materials. That is how we can hopefully get rid of the tarps, the stacked junk cars, things of that nature. If there is a vegetative canopy, it has to be confined to the property it's located on. And then we would also say no more temporary shade cloths unless you're on a grandfathered medical marijuana grow. In order to accomplish this, we also have to tweak some definitions of junk and junkyard.
Can you explain why the medical marijuana grow is kind of exempt?
When we were looking at the rules, the medical marijuana program was almost 20 years old, and we realized that there was quite a substantial investment and buy-in already on the grandfathered medical marijuana. The program had been around. We had substantial farms already out there. It had appeared to be pretty well accepted by the community. So throughout these, you're going to see grandfathering provisions for the medical marijuana because they had that vested interest, so to speak, for operating for almost 20 years.
So there's no state law precluding or enforcing a reg on medical from a fence standpoint?
No, there's not. As a matter of fact, I might add, too, that these rules were actually reviewed by the OMMP attorney and the OLCC attorney, as well as Department of Ag, DLCD, and some of the other attorneys as well.
Okay.
The other thing that applies in all zones is plant setbacks from the road. Currently, we do not have plant setbacks. We do have setbacks for fences to protect the vision clearance triangle. The proposed code would be to get the plants further from the road to lessen safety concerns, address visual complaints, minimize fence violations of height and vision clearance, support the comprehensive plan goal purpose of the rural residential zone of orderly development. And because there was town hall comments, I can remember one in particular where the gentleman stood up and said, I want to be able to look out my backyard at my own plants. So based on that, we thought, well, allow the plants, but allow them in the backyard or to be far enough away from the road, where we would reduce the temptation basically to drive by and pull out plants or some of those things that we had heard concerns on. Exemptions, it would not be applicable to the grandfathered medical. And then in the residential zones, what it would say is no plant could be allowed within 100 feet of the road right-of-way unless it can be in line with setback of adjacent homes from the right-of-way. And what that means is currently we allow homes have to be set back a certain distance, but sometimes if they're less than the required, you can average that distance to get all the homes in a line down the road. We would allow the same thing for the plants. So if you can't meet a 100-foot setback, you can at least try and get them all in line with the homes that are out there. So it's 100 feet or that average.
Who establishes the first, if you're gonna say I'm gonna put them all in line, so a guy goes to 50 feet, then everybody can go to 50 feet, who established that first one?
So that average distance would be of the homes. So if there's a home out there that's 50 feet and another home that's say 30 feet, that new setback would be 50 and 30 divided by 2.
40.
Would become the average setback, right?
Okay,
so it's 100 feet or the average. And in non-residential zones, the setback would be the same as it would be for an agricultural building, which is 30 or 35. The difference in that being those zones tend to be further away from homes. They're further out there. They're more agriculture in nature. Plant setbacks from the side. The current code does not have plant setbacks. It does have setbacks for structures. Ag buildings have to be 30 feet back. Ag buildings typically have odors associated with them, sometimes crops associated with them. So the goal was to have the plant setbacks be the same as the ag building, which is 30 feet from a side property line. So basically new in the canopy of a mature marijuana plant would be 30 feet from the property line. Now, it does, again, exempt the grandfathered medical. It also grandfathers existing recreational, those that had their permits and licenses and proceeded in good faith this first year. And then it also exempts those of personal use, when you can have the four plants, et cetera. So, and that, again, is measured from the canopy of the plant, not the base of the plant. Like I said, the camping compounds became quite an issue. We did propose some amendments in the original draft that went to the Plan Commission. The state had some concerns about that. So what happened is we just withdrew the whole thing and said, let's address camping, the majority of the camping regulations, when we look at housing. We know we have some housing amendments that we have to bring forward in the future. So we thought we would just bring those forward at that time. What we do have, though, is the current code does look at camping. In a residential zone, you can camp up to 4 months in a 12-year period. In a resource zone, you can do 1 month. Like I said, originally we had a staff proposal to amend that, and the state came and said, Josephine County, you're doing this all wrong. In these non-resource zones, it's not 4 months, it's 1 month period. So we said, that's when we said, okay, let's take a step back from the camping, some of these camping rules, and bring them forward after we have more time to look at them. What we do propose, though, is that for now, amend the code to clarify that camping in a farm and forest zone is 30 days only instead of the four months as we have written in the code right now. And then also to prohibit camping under the occupancy section, which I'll get into in a little bit, okay? And then that also means we have to do some amendments to the definitions of camping, camping party, and camping stay. And you've received all those and the explanations of why. Soil runoff became something of interest. A lot of farms, not all of them, may require soil to be brought in and to be brought back out with every crop. The current code regulates soil runoff on slopes greater than 15%. So this proposal would just be clarified that if there's more than 10 cubic yards of runoff has to be contained at the site, require best management practices, it has to be graded and seeded within 30 days, and if on a slope of greater than 15%, they would require the stormwater management plan like we currently do. Talk a little bit about enforcement. Again, enforcement was something that was set out in that Zoning and Enabling Act back in the 20s. It basically says that you need some mechanism to enforce the zoning rules that you're creating. So I just wanted to share that with you. What does Oregon allow? And I'm going to go through, spend a little bit of time here on the whole enforcement section, because it has really been addressed in some of these letters. What does Oregon allow? ORS 153 allows counties to establish violation rules and fines and issue citations. It allows counties to also impose other penalties in addition to the fine, such as seeking compliance. It sets maximum fines. In this case, these would be zoning violations or Class B violations, so they would have a maximum fine, $130 to $1,000. It allows for process to collect those fines. Josephine's proposal is not to utilize law enforcement or the district attorney. The fine would be collected by the code enforcement administrator. It allows for a code enforcement official, which is not proposed. Josephine County currently has a code enforcement administrator, and I went back in the records 2 decades, and we've had the code enforcement administrator at least 2 decades. I'm not sure how long it predates that, but we've had that person on staff that long. It is that person that would be issuing and collecting those citations. So just a little bit about why we feel it's important to have a citation ordinance. And I just want to clarify, there's people out there that say we are doing this just for marijuana. That is not true. As a matter of fact, the violations that we have are violations of the Rural Land Development Code. So what we're seeing are problems with sometimes junk cars, usually compounds. Because the directive allowed us to look at everything and how we would address everything, the issue of citations fell into play when we were looking at these amendments. It's not specific to marijuana. It is an amendment to the entire Josephine County Rural Land Development Code. So when you're issuing citations, it would be for anything in that code, not just marijuana-related violations.
So, Ms. Smelter, specifically on this one, and just because I'm asking questions doesn't mean you guys can't, during her report, you don't have to. It's 52 slides. It'd be tough to remember. But just a wrecking yard? So what about people? I almost think I know.
Can you speak up? There's people that are
here. Sure. I almost think I know where that picture was taken, and that person, I thought, was an at-home mechanic. So what about the, not a wrecking yard per se, but somebody who has a home occupation permit for that kind of a process?
If they have a permit, they would not be in violation. Okay. One of the problems we have is oftentimes you'll contact somebody and explain to them the rules, and I'll go through the process here, but we tend to get ignored a lot on these, and we tend to get a lot of complaints from neighbors. And if you look back at, again, the purpose of zoning and what it's there to protect, we have to start doing something about it. And we just don't have the mechanism right now to effectively enforce our codes, or we do not feel we do, in an efficient manner. And I'll walk through that process, and hopefully you can understand a little better on that.
If this guy were to take those cars and put them behind a fence so they couldn't be seen from the road, does that apply? I fall into this thing because I'm a car guy, and I don't, you know, I have a ton of unlicensed that don't run cars with no engines in them, and they're valuable to me, but I, you know, they may be an eyesore to
your
to
wife.
Oh, yeah, well, that too. Did she set you up to pay you to do that? But anyway, you know, I would fall into that. So if this gentleman, is it a sight issue, or, you know, because this right here, five unlicensed vehicles not running in condition, I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got that easily. But I'm in an industrial zone here in the city. But I'm thinking out there, if he were to shield that from view, does that, or is this complaint driven? Is that, and basically, is this complaint driven, or are we driving around taking a look at that saying, I'm going to bust you?
No, we are complaint driven. We do not have time to drive around looking for him. But we are complaint driven. And the reason why I bring this slide up is because one of the things I read in the paper or online was talking about how Josephine County was, if they had citation authority, was going to go after everyone who had a junk car in their front yard. That is not true. There's a certain threshold at what point it becomes a violation, and that is the five vehicles. In this situation, the person would either need some type of permit for it, and if they can't get that permit, then they would have to remove them. License them would be another option. There's ways to meet the code that are actually quite simple if people would just respond to the letters. So in this particular case, like I said, it's the five unlicensed that is triggering
okay,
some of these violations.
I don't let me quote vehicular code, but I can't license. I have a 65 GTO that doesn't have an engine transmission. It's not insured, so therefore I can't license it. I can register it, I can title it, but I can't license it.
Sure.
So I don't know whether I'm just. We're not on that subject. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I wandered around a little bit. But
and before you move
we'll
on, sure. Ms. Smelter, so there was a reference to not being able to hear very well, and that's just a general problem with me because I don't speak up that loud, and sometimes I don't have something worth listening to. But there is hearing-assisted devices over here. So if anybody kind of is just struggling and really wants to hear what we're saying, there's an opportunity to maybe remedy that over here. So just come and check one of those out. Sorry, go ahead.
Julie, I believe my question is there an alternative to removing the cars, licensing the cars? Is there an alternative that this guy could do? Basically, could he fence it or not? I guess
he could put it inside a building.
Beg your pardon?
He could put it inside of a building.
Okay.
Right. It is something, you know, I'll be honest with you. When I started working with this code in June, there's a lot of areas for improvement in this code. And looking at that section may very well be one of them. You know, if you put it behind a solid fence, sometimes codes will say if it's behind a solid fence, then they don't regulate it. But at the current time, the code doesn't allow for that provision. So other things that tend to be a real issue for us are the compound. And they tend to start out small, and they tend to really grow. Here's one where we have 9 camping units on the property. We've been after this for over 6 months. We receive a lot of complaints on this one, as we do on other ones, and I see some familiar faces here today which may comment on some of the compounds they're having to deal with, but it really becomes an issue. This is part of a compound. This is a single-family home that is being built onto a camper. it has to be removed because it doesn't meet code. You can't do it, but it doesn't meet building safety code either. Then there's other things. In some of these compounds, you start seeing, you know, illegal furnaces, things of that, which actually make a whole safety or fire issue for the entire compound. We end up having a lot of associated problems. This is more of a tent or tarpaulin compound, but what we end up seeing are septic, no provision for safe water, devaluing neighboring properties. A lot of times we get complaints on these where the occupants are stealing property from the neighbors. We know several of these, the police have been out to repeatedly. So they really do become an issue for us, and it's the biggest issue we have that really pushes us to really want that citation ordinance, because these are the ones where we get a lot of complaints and we just don't get cooperation on them. We have another one, Landowner X. He has over 24 properties. He was in July. We talked to him about the violations associated. He said he wouldn't do it again. He continued to acquire property, lease it out, and we have numerous violations on the lease properties. They just tend to ignore us after a certain period of time. Regionally, I just want to let you know what other counties do. So I looked at our neighbors. Douglas has an enforcement section that applies to the entire county code, not just their zoning code. Their fines are $500 for a non-continuing offense, $1,000 for a continuing. Their building code has a code enforcement agency, which is under the building official that issues citations. They also allow the director to issue citations for violations of the land use code. Both are considered code enforcement officials. Jackson has it under their county code. They use what we call a code enforcement officer to issue the citations. And then, of course, building and land use have their own code enforcement division that uses citation authority that is granted to them under the general code. We are not proposing that the citation authority be applicable to the general code. It would be applicable only to the rural land development code.
May I ask a question on this? Citations don't force compliance.
Correct.
Josephine County's courts, for instance, have the highest non-compliance of payment in the state, and or one of them. They also issue some of the highest fees in the state, so it can go hand in hand. Issuing a citation, if somebody doesn't pay that to the code enforcement administrator, what then?
Then it goes to Wally's office. So then our legal department takes over, and to be honest with you, it would probably end up being a lien on the property.
Okay.
Then it comes to us, and then we move that process forward or don't.
So enforcement in all zones, current code, not in the code. Internal policy is that we give 3 tries before we refer it to the legal department. Legal action is optional. And I'll walk through that entire process with you, because like Commissioner Hare said, once we refer it to legal, then legal brings it to the Board of Commissioners, and the Board of Commissioners has the final say whether we proceed with that legal action or not. The proposed code has the enforcement section, which you've read. It does give citation authority. It is consistent with state statutes. It creates an option to create a compliance plan, and it makes citation option available after 2 tries. So, this is the current policy. Current policy is you get a 30-day note. We find somebody reports a violation. We go out there and definitely a violation, so we give you a 30-day notice. During that time, we do offer a opportunity for a compliance plan. Typically, they're 90-day compliance plans, but we try to work with people because some of these just have so much going on there that they cannot accomplish it in 30 days. So we try to work with them and do a compliance plan. If we don't get any answer after the 30 days, we proceed with a 15-day notice. If we get no answer, we then provide follow-up with a 7-day notice, informing the landowner that if not resolved after the 7 days, the matter may be referred to the legal department. When we refer it to legal, it then goes to the Board of Commissioners, and then legal processes it if the board agrees to proceed with it, and then oftentimes it may end up going to court. With the proposed citation ability, and the way it's written, it prescribes and requires a 30-day notice, and then it would be a 15-day notice, and then a letter with the citation. Once you issue that citation, they have another 30 days to comply before it's referred to the following process that we did before, which is the Board of Commissioners, legal, and then the courts. So what it does is currently there is, we don't have to give anybody any notice. We do it as an internal policy. With this, it would be written in the code that we have to give them a 30-day notice. We have to give them a 15-day notice, and then we have to follow up with a 30-day notice when we issue that citation. Past proposals versus the current proposal. We hear a lot that we've tried doing this before, get the message, the public doesn't want this. This is not the same thing. In the past, it was proposed that there be a hearings officer. The proposal would utilize the existing code enforcement administrator that is in the Community Development Department. In the past, it applied to the entire county code. The proposal is it applies only to the Rural Land Development Code and what's in it. In the past, that person, the hearings officer, may issue warning notice. In the proposed, we must issue two warning notices. In the past, there was citation authority. In the proposed, we have citation authority. In the past, there would be no further notice required. In the proposed, we must issue another 30-day notice once that citation is issued. In the past, it goes to court. In the proposed, it would go to legal. The past proposal that was defeated, the fines were per day for a maximum of $10,000. In other words, every day that you saw that violation constituted a separate offense. Under the proposed, it is not a per day. It's a one-time fine for a maximum of $1,000. It's $130 to $1,000.
So if you don't comply and you go through the whole thing and you get the citation and you come in and pay it, but you don't do any of the above,
they still have to comply.
Then they still have to comply.
They still have to comply.
But if a fine didn't do it for them, what enforcement do we have? I mean,
the fine is basic. I'll be honest with you. The fine is basically a carrot. So all these fears out there that we're going to be issuing 1 million citations and going up and down the street issuing citations, it's really the carrot to say, you know what, we've given you so many opportunities to comply. Our next thing is a citation. And you know what? Be advised, you're going to get that citation, and you're still going to have to comply. It usually, history shows, and in talking to the other counties, it gets people to comply. Once they start realizing they're facing a potential fine, they start working with you.
I think from my perspective, it also saved the board, if you did get compliance, from spending a lot of time and energy going to court. If they don't, after the citation, I mean, we go to court. I think we have a few of those pending. We try not to. I mean, we don't really have the resources to take people. But usually it's a pretty substantial violation. Health and safety is the big ones that we pursue. So you take this opportunity to silence your phone. Sure appreciate that.
Okay, now we're going to go into those that are specific, those text amendments that would be specific to the rural residential zone. Plant setbacks, we talked a little bit about before. So in the RR1, RR2.5, and RR5 zone for lots less than 2.5 acres, personal use and grandfathered medical basically are grandfathered in and would have that 10-foot side yard, 25-foot rear yard setback. For all RR5 greater than 2.5, the plant when mature has to be 30 feet from the side property line. In all other zones, such as the non-resource zones, the setback would also be 30 feet from the side property line. When we talk about dwelling first, and we're going to talk about that, when we looked at these zones, when we looked at the Lux licenses, which were the ones for the recreational plants, we started seeing a lot of the grows or a lot of the licensees were out-of-towners, not living on the property. We received a lot of complaints that people are not vested in their community and therefore they're having the dogs run and transients and things of this nature. So we knew it was something we had to look at. So in the, again, rural residential specific, it says that, and again, it exempts the grandfather medical, but a dwelling must be on the lot first. There are waivers available. And that waiver would be for if you have an RR5 lot greater than 2.5 acres, if one of your other lots has a dwelling on it, then we can give you a waiver. Otherwise, you must have a dwelling on that lot. Camping is prohibited if a waiver is given. So that's one of our ways to make sure we can hopefully try and minimize some of the compounds that are creeping up out there. We also looked at accessory structures. And basically, we currently allow a number of accessory structures. You can have them up to a certain size. You probably read that. But one thing we don't look at right now are impervious surfaces. Impervious surfaces are those that don't absorb the rain. So what we want to do is minimize the amount of hard surfaces on a lot to prevent runoff onto neighboring properties and to prevent overcrowding. So there's an impervious surface provision in here that it cannot exceed 50% of the lot. Odor was something that a lot of people wanted us to regulate the plants. We really couldn't find a way to regulate the plant odor that's outside unless you had great setbacks, and we don't even know if that would have accomplished it. But what we did do was look at the some of the other county ordinances that are out there. They do have regulations on indoor grow areas where they would require an odor mitigation system like a scrubber. So what this says is indoor grows on RR5 lots greater than 2.5, you would actually have to have an odor mitigation system. As far as waste, the state does regulate waste, the compost. And what we're saying is in the smaller residential zones, if you have a compost pile more than 100 square feet, it has to be stored and secured in a waste receptacle or composting bin. As far as noise, for all residential districts, other than a fan for odor mitigation, there shall be no mechanically generated noise associated with the production or processing of marijuana audible from adjacent properties 1 hour after sunset nor prior to sunrise. Now, before I go further, I just have to let you know, when the Plan Commission discussed the proposals that we just talked about, probably the biggest one that had opposition was the citation one. The other ones, such as the lighting and some of these other ones that we went through, I missed the lighting slide. There is a lighting one that says no lighting shall be emitted from accessory buildings as seen from adjacent properties, but you probably read that in the proposal that you have before you. But we really didn't receive complaints. The biggest complaint was focused on the citations. It didn't address lighting. We really didn't hear, I can't remember hearing any opposition to the odor. The complaints were focused on that citation ordinance. The Plan Commission actually went back and forth when they reviewed those proposed amendments. And basically they came up with different recommendations and then finally said, you know what, let's just forward this with no recommendation. They couldn't reach a consensus on what to send forward to you. So those were the ones that were applied to all or specific to the rural residential. One of the other amendments that came up was related to the Williams CAC. And what that is in our county we have certain areas. At one time we had 8. We're down to 1 CAC, Community Advisory Committee, and Citizen Advisory Committee. And basically what a Citizen Advisory Committee is they kind of are a watchdog on planning matters. They interact with the planning department and give input on planning matters. So we only have 1 right now, and that's in Williams. And they actually said, you know, we do want to work with you on the marijuana regulations. We would like to see some amendments that would give us more ability to review these. So that's the gist of pretty much what the Williams CAC proposal was. And you've read that in your letter. So it talks about the process that they're asking. Basically, they want time to review the applications, time to comment on them. Staff has no issue at all with working with them on that if that is proposed. One of the other things they did is they said, you know, in the future, we'd like to start looking at rules specific to Williams. And so we talked about creating an overlay for them. So what this proposal does is it also creates an overlay which doesn't really have any rules in it yet. But by creating the overlay, you're saying, yes, we're willing to accept that you want to have some own rules for your committee. And if this is passed, then they will go forth and develop their own rules, which will then come back as text amendments for us to review at a later date. But by actually creating the overlay section, it gives them the okay to proceed with working on special rules for Williams.
What's the makeup of the CAC?
Is
there 15 members, 20 members?
It's actually a 5-member board. There's state statutes that govern them. There's actually a county code that governs them. they have to have bylaws and they have to follow the same open meeting laws that we do. So it's a very formal process, actually. They are, like I said, they're the only CAC we have right now. We interact with them on a weekly basis. So from a staffing point, I think it's good to accommodate them. It's good to see citizens actually want to work with us and have something specific to their area.
Are they, they're an advisory committee,
they're advisory.
Correct? You're not transferring
correct
authority to them to say, well, no, we don't want it this way or whatever. They have to come back to you and to the board?
Correct. They are merely advisory, but I will say this. It's nice to have somebody giving us input on issues because we don't always know what's going on out there. So it's kind of like having the pulse in the neighborhood to work with. So that is the another part of this proposed set of text amendments that
so
you have
there,
for you.
There may come up at times opportunities where you'd like to weigh in on these things and apologize for our structure, but there really isn't an opportunity to do that other than the 5 minutes that you'll be provided after Ms. Schmelzer's done and the board is done. This is really our time with the planning staff, and then we'll get to you. So apologize, but you might have to just jot it down. You can provide clarification afterward.
And is there a mechanism for somebody that doesn't, so this five-member board says, yeah, these are the rules that we want to live by in Williams. Is there a mechanism where somebody says, I don't want to live by those rules because of?
Absolutely, and that's why it goes to a public hearing. So they come up with the rules they want to have in their CAC, and then it comes back to us just like today, where we have the Plan Commission has a public hearing on it. Depending what's in there, it might also come to the board for approval, depending what zones they propose it to apply to. And just a little bit on that, state statutes say if your proposal affects resource zones, then it also requires board approval. If it just affects, let's say, residential zones, then it would just take Plan Commission approval. But yes, there are proposals that they come up with. Like I said, this would give them the framework to actually start working on those and bring some proposals forward. I've already told them that when they do have their proposals, I would run it past DLCD and some of the other attorneys, Public Works, et cetera, to see what can be legally put in there. And then it'll come through the entire public hearing process just like today.
Thank you.
Some of the things that have come up that have not been addressed in the proposed text amendments was, one was canopy limits. The state allowed us to limit that to 40,000. At the time, we felt it was best not to touch that, give it a first year and kind of see how things have been going. The state changed some rules that we're actually seeing canopies greater than 40,000, but at this time we don't have any amendments to that effect. We do have a lot of issues with tree removal and invasive species that we decided not to do through the Rural Land Development Code and leave it up to the Department of Ag and Forestry. Complaints about dirt on roads, those concerns were forwarded to Public Works, but there's nothing in our code about that. Water, again, people wanted to see us do more with the water. We felt it was best to leave it up to DSL because they are the ones that do work with the water rights. Access, parking, and traffic, had a lot of complaints on that. Properties do have to have a legal access. We do regulate gates, so that is pretty well addressed already. A lot of concerns about guns and dogs. Hopefully some of the proposals we have will help alleviate that, especially if we can crack down on the compounds and especially if we can stop or requiring occupancy in those RR5 grows. And then there's a lot of complaints about law enforcement, and as you know, there's nothing the RLDC can do about that.
On discharging firearms, I would think if you're got a pretty close proximity to neighbors, isn't there something about...
Not in the county code.
Endangering or anything? Nothing?
You can't shoot towards someone's house, but otherwise you can shoot the county.
Well, and it's something that we can't address through this code. So, okay, I just want to go through the letters. We're wrapping up here, okay, so just bear with me. So I just want to go through the letters that were received. So the letters, I received a few, and then the ones that were sent to you, some of the ones that were forwarded to me, I also have those to summarize. So I'm going to go through and summarize those for the record real quick. Okay. I object to the proposed changes of the amendments that allow marijuana grows on rural residential land. The county has a large percentage of land zoned RR5, and allowing legal grow sites on residential land will significantly impact neighbors and neighborhoods. Commercial marijuana grows should be on farm-zoned lands, agricultural lands. Goes on to talk about groundwater, herbicides and pesticides, fencing. And then just a concluding statement that they believe approving commercial marijuana grow sites is not compatible with a residential home. And that is from Gene Mount. And then we have, I support the new text amendments that address growing marijuana in the residential zones, including giving the planning director the authority to enforce the rules. And that is from Helen Early. And then we have, I 100% agree with the proposed changes. In addition, I stand behind the director and the work she has done and continues to do for Josephine County, and that's Phyllis Selfin. And then we have one with two specific concerns. One is water and wells, and they feel that the county does have authority to address that. And then the other concern regards enforcement. It talks about how the code talks about alleged violations and the fact that it appears that people could be penalized without being proven guilty. And then they remind you of previous efforts at the citation ordinance, and that's from Malcolm Drake. Then we have one, as retired people living next to a pot farm, we have nowhere to turn for help. The state doesn't care about our plight, nor does our state rep. We hope you will create regulations with teeth. They talk about the environmental damage. State pot regulators told us they don't really have any rules. Check with your county government. From what we have seen, it doesn't look like the county is going to have any regulations with teeth. We are left hanging, slowly twisting in the wind. And that is from Stephen Florence Shepard. And then we have, please repeal the recently passed voluntary code compliance certification ordinance, and that is by Ricky Brown. And I'm not even going to comment on that because that's not subject of this hearing at all. That was something that was adopted before you took seat with the county. Then there is Margaret Goodwin, who is the plan of the chair of the plan commission. In the interest of trust of transparency, I strongly urge that if you plan to adopt any new text amendments on matters that were previously rejected in a referendum, it would be highly beneficial to hold a separate, well-publicized hearing dedicated to those text amendments, and that's Margaret Goodwin. And then we have the greatest downfall of civilized societies is their repealed failure to recognize or acknowledge the importance of their forested land to their water supply and their farmland to their food supply, and their ability to independently to provide for their own survival until it's too late. And they talk about greed and degradation and water rights. That's Nina Horsley. We have another one talks about amendments for a hearings officer. Just so you know, that is not part of this public hearing. We will have an upcoming public hearing on a hearings officer, but it's not part of this, so I'll skip past that. The letter also talks about the vote opposed code enforcement, giving the community development director citation authority as a code enforcement administrator is essentially the same thing as, and is as equally appalling. It goes on to talk about some concerns she has about the way that the section is written and some things that she feels are not legal, and that is by Sandy Casanelli. And then we have a very long one, which I'm not going to read. It's 10 pages and then has a 4-page attachment. It's from Ray Smith. You have received that, so I won't go into the detail on that. Just real quick, I believe these proposals to be woefully and inadequate to address the impacts and conflicts that have arisen from the unregulated rush to transform the rural residential properties. Goes on to suggest some amendments regarding odor mitigation and several other things. And then we have John Chambers, who is a member of our plan commission, submitted basically his comments and his dialogue that he had presented to the plan commission. I won't go through that either. That's a 9-page letter. But just real quickly, he did talk about Measure 91 and prohibition, state regulation, education on medicinal purposes, and new industry, odor, lighting, things of that nature. So
the last paragraph wrapped it up.
And the last paragraph says, I recommend the amendments as proposed with some modification restricting total acreage. And again, that was John Chambers. So those were the letters that had been forwarded to me or that I had received. And with that, I'm done.
The board received one additional one. I received it, I guess it was just this morning at 8:07 from Linda Nadal, Linda Jane Nadal. But otherwise, I really appreciate people taking the avenue of not necessarily needing to be here today to provide testimony to the board. It's kind of nice to have the record, you know, right there to reference people's letters in total context. So taking advantage of that is a good thing in my mind. Any other questions? Commissioner Morgan?
One question that was presented to me was regarding flood zones, where currently, if I want to build a structure in a flood zone, I have to get permitting, or there's certain exemptions and all that. How does that work to structures for agricultural use in the flood zone?
Okay. So a flood zone is regulated by the federal government, and we end up having, we adopt the floodplain zoning ordinance. Just so people understand, when a county adopts a floodplain zoning ordinance, what that means is their residents are then eligible to apply for flood insurance. If we did not, our residents would not be able to apply for flood insurance. So what it does when it comes to agricultural buildings, some buildings end up being exempt depending how they are built. When it comes to marijuana plants in general, if they are involving fill, which many of them are, they tend to be a little pot or pack, that ends up being fill and actually cannot be put in a floodplain until they obtain floodplain approval. Floodplain approval is a process they go through where they need elevations and they need to show what we call a no-rise study, which shows that the building they're putting in there or the fill they're putting in there won't alter the water levels in the event of a flood.
So in the current process of, I guess there's two different processes for both medicinal and recreational and such, but through the permitting process through OLCC, is there a process through your department before a permit is received from the state?
No. The only process is that LUX, that form that says that use is allowed in that zone, but it doesn't say that they're going to get permits or anything to that effect. So it doesn't look at floodplain or anything at that point. What happens is the state, through the OMMP program and the OLCC program, is they issue their licenses. I'll be honest with you, there's very little interaction between agencies and counties at this time when they issue those. One of the problems we have right now is oftentimes, I shouldn't say often, but sometimes we find where people are operating without permits. I can think of one offhand where we've been after them to get their permit and they haven't. So that's the type of thing where it'd be nice if OLCC would check to see if they have permits first or follow up and see if they can get permits. But that's not part of the OLCC or the OMMP review process at this time.
And are you aware of any of the proposed amendment changes at the state level that are before the legislature this session?
Yes, I am.
And have those had any bearing on any of the recommendations or proposals?
No. As a matter of fact, I talked with the attorney for OMMP for quite a while when the Plan Commission was meeting, because people were talking about all these great changes that were coming and we just really need to hold off. And you know, we couldn't find anything that was so substantial that should say a county should just hold off and put everything on hold for regulation. I'm also aware of some that are being proposed outside of OLCC and OMMP that are just proposals being brought forward by representatives or other people at AOC. And none of them, I would have to say none of them affect what you see today.
So one of the things that was suggested was that the county does have some say in water. So for somebody who's wanting to abide by all the rules and do everything above board and they come before the planning department to get a permit, is that something that you have them produce as far as water rights or what water accessibility before permits are issued?
So the way the code is written right now is if somebody wants to build a house, for example, the code says you have to show a proof of water rights and that you can have water. There's nothing in the code that says in order to have a marijuana grow or any crop, that you have to show proof of water rights.
And then, so that I don't hog all my cohorts here time, going back to the compound, I've been on several in this county, and I'm just curious, as you get complaints currently, DEQ is the authority when it comes to any waste management in the rural lands. So as far as a need for enforcement at the county level, I'm not sure that we need that. Even as you stated, it is a DEQ issue. But are those currently being referred to DEQ when you're hearing of compounds that are just digging a hole and kind of scooting along? No pun intended.
So originally, we would refer those complaints to DEQ. And DEQ said, we're not going to act on them if they come from you. They have to come from the landowner directly. So now we have to refer the landowners directly to DEQ to file the complaint.
On the composting aspect, are you talking about the byproduct of growing cannabis?
Yes.
That's what your compost, you're going to take everything you have left over and
correct.
Put it in a hole or something or whatever you do? Okay, thank you.
One more question. Repeat violators. At this point, maximum fine is $1,000, and then from there you potentially go through the process of going through court. So they get the property cleaned up, they pay the fine, everything's well and good, and then it kind of goes back. Do they start from scratch?
They do.
Or if they're found by the courts, even in that process, and still don't clean up, what happens then?
If they go through the whole legal process and they're still not cleaning it up, they would need a court order from a judge. And if they don't comply with it, then there's different avenues we can take. One is the lien on the property. One is for the county to come in and clean it up and actually try and recoup those costs through a lien on the property.
And that we do in partnership with the Solid Waste Agency?
The Solid Waste Agency, Environmental Health, basically goes after rubbish on property. And they will not inspect rubbish on property unless there's 3 complaints filed.
Any distance from the ground zero? In other words, they have people, the complaints have to come in, say, within the 1,000 feet or something, or it could just be somebody driving by?
You know, that's a really good question. I believe it's 1 mile, but I don't know that for sure. That is actually handled by a different department. But I know it does take 3 complaints in order to follow up on a rubbish violation.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know the answer to that either, but I think you're right along those lines. There is probably a distance restriction, but that's under the Solid Waste Agency. Okay, well, you didn't lie when you said it was going to take you about an hour to get through all that, and that was minus our questions. So I had predicted a time for a break at about 10:30. I'll leave it up to this board as to whether or not you want to start with the next section, which would be comments from citizens if there are no more questions of us. This will be the next draft or next phase of this hearing process. Really, that's kind of why we wanted to do this, was to hear from you guys. So I'm going to encourage your comments to be directed just to the board, not to the public. Also going to encourage you to not be necessarily repetitive. If you can remember the person's name who said basically everything you wanted to say but got there first, you could just say ditto, and we'll mark it down as such. This isn't an opportunity to say, well, there's 150 people who are for something, and then there's 10 people who are opposed to it, and thus that's the purview of the community at large, and that's how we should go forward. It's really just, you know, one-on-one. Each individual comment is coming in, and that's how we're going to be evaluating that. And I think, as it was said, I don't know that we really have an expectation of coming out of here with a refined piece of text amendment proposal today. This is really just kind of starting from those 4 town halls were really important, I think, for giving direction to a previous commissioner and the planning director when she was first hired. But I didn't attend those, and that was purposeful. This is the structure, in my opinion, of where we're going to get the best opportunity to hear after a proposal's been submitted. Otherwise, it's just kind of out there, and people are speculating on what they'd like to see. So if there's nothing else, you're going to be provided 5 minutes, and that doesn't seem like a lot of time, but there has been examples in my 6 years and over 300 of such hearings where people really do a pretty good job most often if they're prepared to get through everything they need to in even less time. Mr. Seligman's illustrating 3 minutes at a weekly business session. Land use hearings provide you 5, but you really need to be on point to the subject that's before us today. If it's a different subject, I might have to cut you off a little bit and say, well, that's going to be a subject for another day. We're just really trying to get through the issues that were presented by Ms. Schmeltzer and that are before the board. So All you have to do is just raise your hand. There is no left or right. I don't subscribe by that. We're going to start with the gentleman in the back. Please just state your name and general locale of residence for the record. You'll be provided 5 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Shane Kristen. I live in the county, Williams. I appreciate all the work that the planning department has done in talking with legal representatives of other departments. From my experience in dealing with the board, past members, and a little bit of this crew, you seem to rely a lot on your legal counsel for what you can do. I would like to propose to you that you ask your legal counsel what you cannot do. Part of what your planning person said was you wanted to impound runoff from a property. I think that would put you in non-compliance with the State Water Board, because you can't impound runoff water. It's against the law. And Mr. Hare, I've come to speak before you a few times, and you have past experience in being associated with a cannabis group, and I really want you to look deeply at the subject of odor. Now, admittedly, there are times of the year where a cannabis plant can produce a great deal of odor, and if there's numbers of them, yes, we have odor. But that's only a limited time of the year. I've asked the board before to delineate where those complaints of smell are coming from. Now, if we only have 2 months that this plant is being offensive, what about those other months that people are complaining about? My impression is that people are complaining about the use, the smoke, the smell. I don't think you can regulate that. My best advice would be to require dark sky lighting so that neighbors aren't offended and I get to see stars. And what disturbs me is every year when they flip the switch, I see a fire truck head in that direction because somebody calls and says there's a fire. Some of those lights are pretty orange. And I feel that's a waste of resources. If we could have dark sky lighting where the light would not emit anywhere off of the property, we could eliminate that problem. I think there needs to be a neighborhood involvement in granting a permit where, for instance, we have a problem in Williams. I think it's going to be rectified. The last CAC meeting, the two opposing parties were in conversation. If there was a process where growers could be encouraged, if they're going to use large greenhouses, to have fans that emit sound on a low decibel level, we could take care of a lot of the complaints of noise. I've been involved in the medical community here in this county for 10 years. I've been appealing to you for about 2. I also ran against these two folks up here, you know. I appreciate, again, your service to the people. This is a difficult job. Mr. DeYoung told me, if you get this job, they're going to hate you.
Half. Only half.
Only half.
Be lucky if it's only half.
Is that my time?
That was. But you sure covered a lot of subjects. I think you're a pretty good example of what can be conveyed in 5 minutes.
On a last note, sir.
Real quick.
I would ask that you separate the CAC for Williams out of this proposal so it can be handled on a different agenda.
Great.
Thank you very much.
So when you're given 3 minutes at some of our weekly business sessions, I'll kind of give you 30 seconds after. 5 minutes, I'm going to cut you off right at five because we've got a lot of people, and we'll be here till next week if we give everybody another 30 seconds, which graduates into a lot more than that. Sir, in the front row, Mr. Carhart. Try to get the most important subject first.
My name is Stephen Williams. I'm a resident of Williams and a member of the Williams CAC. I'm going to read this. We are sure it can be quite wearing for you when proposals appear before you and the public brings strong emotions, accusations, and heated controversy. The hearing can be very long and quite uncomfortable, and when your decision is made, there will be citizens who are very unhappy and critical. I am sure you often think how great it would be if the citizens who have differing needs and hold very different perspectives could have met earlier with skilled facilitators and found acceptable compromises before a proposal reaches you. The CAC works this way within Williams. We have town meetings to air feelings and perspectives, and then we work towards compromises that all can live with. In order, however, to serve you and our community in this way, we must know with enough lead time what land use issues are coming. We just went through a situation where we did not know what a proposed land use, local land use, until it was about to be permitted. This issue almost broke our community apart, turning longtime friends against friends. Had we known about the situation in advance, we would have been able to mediate the differences of opinion, create workable compromises, and avoid a great deal of community strife. To serve our community best, we need this early notification. This is even more critical when the CAC is being asked for input for the official planning department record. The main gist of what we are asking from you today is advance notice of, and when indicated, a more thorough review process for potentially controversial land applications in our area. We are asking you to separately approve the amendments to Article 12, 20, and 69.5 in order to grant us what we need so we can best carry out the responsibilities that you have given us. Let the CAC do the local groundwork so that when things reach you, they are no longer controversial. We will make your lives we will make your lives easier if you allow us to work efficiently, effectively within our own community to further our mutual goals of preserving a healthy rural lifestyle in Josephine County. I also would like to add that if we do get our overlay structure that we are requesting of you, it must be noted that we are going to be doing extensive vetting and hearings, et cetera, in our local community. That it's all about community input and a community approval. Before we make any kind of moves as far as that amendments that we bring to you folks. I do believe that that's critical, that you be aware of that.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Just want to make a note that if you had a question for staff or the board later, we won't necessarily engage with you immediately, so you're not going to get immediate gratification on that. We'll probably do that at a later date, maybe take a break and such. Gentleman over there on the wall. You actually have to come to the podium so that we get you on the record. So that we get you on the record as far as your name, your address, and the issue that you brought before the board.
All right. My name is Al Karger, and I'm from Selma. And all I really wanted to ask is what I seen on the slideshow, and it could have been directed to this lady, but what is a serpentine zone? And also what, I just wanted to know what the zoning with caretakers, or there was something on caretakers that I missed. But I mostly, what is the serpentine zone and where are those zones located at in Josephine County?
She may be able to get with you later to clarify that. So that's probably my fault. I referenced that as well.
Okay. So I should get...
You should. Yeah, that's a specific question.
And on the caretaking thing goes to her too?
Probably.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Cliff Thomason, Grants Pass. Until this Board of Commissioners takes a serious look at the countywide homeless problem, I think that these compounds should not only be allowed, but they should be appreciated and expanded upon. You know, too often, that's the only place where a lot of these people can't go. And to put a 30-day limit on that, I think is wrong. I think this board should address homeless issue, and I think it should be done sooner than later. And I think these property owners, you know, should be appreciated, you know, for taking people in. Otherwise, they may be, you know, on the streets. Our president right now is proposing to build thousands of miles of fences. In Josephine County, I would like to take the opposite approach and tear down these fences. In Josephine County, fencing should be optional and not mandated. And the Josephine County Board of Commissioners should use their home rule authority, you know, to find a way to make it optional for growers to have fencing or not. In regards to some of the other things on that slide, Josephine County has always been strong on property rights, and yet a lot of these proposals go against that. If I have a rural property and I want to dig a hole and crap in it, I should be able to. We have, for hundreds of years, did that before we had these DEQ and EPA regulations. So I would take a look at this proposed amendments and rules with that in mind, that, you know, the property rights of Oregon have always been first. That's why we're a home rule charter county, and I would appreciate you taking it from that angle. Thank you.
Leave it to former governor candidate Thomason to raise the issue of, so you may disagree with somebody who comes up. Some people agreed with Mr. Thomason, in some cases I do as well. But you're not allowed in this hearing process to really, like, applaud or boo. I think it goes both ways. So that people feel comfortable coming up, that's perfectly fine. It can be a silent one. In your head is just fine as a place to keep those comments after somebody else's comments. So we won't allow that in here. The woman with her hand up in the pen. It's just polite and fair both ways. Feel free to pull that mic down if you need to.
Thank you. Hi, my name
is... The whole thing will pull too if you need.
Pardon me?
This portion will pull towards you if you need.
I think I'm good. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah.
My name is Susanna, and I am in Southeast Rural Residential Grants Pass.
What was your last name?
Docimo.
Docimo.
Mm-hmm. First of all, ditto. Thank you for addressing the camping fencing. I've been here 22 years, and my 40-year-old adult son and I live together because he has brain injury and is seriously dependent on being able to work at home as well as cultivating medicine for his injury. It's our livelihood, and it's our home. It took us years to find a home rural residential because we needed to live someplace where he could walk because he cannot drive. So to be an independent adult, he can walk to town and see friends and not be completely dependent on me. We have a 2-acre parcel. That's enough for us to grow. And we are fully licensed and compliant and all of that. If it goes to the 2.5 acres, we can't move. We can't afford to move. we would be not only out of business, but out of medicine. And that would be an extreme hardship. We have plenty of land that we're growing a vegetable garden as well as ornamentals and that sort of thing. We don't need more land. In fact, we downsize to this land to be able to grow. So that would, the 2.5 acres, I think, is just not a necessary thing. I have six neighbors. Five of them are extremely supportive of what we do. In fact, two of them want me to grow for them, which I don't, but extremely supportive. It seems like the problems that were addressed were basically the camping and fencing, which Cliff addressed, non-resident growers. It seems like there's a lot of stuff all lumped in, but if those are the main issues, then why don't those issues get addressed separately and just not lump it all into marijuana growing and there's all these things that need to be changed? Start with the most pressing issues and work your way down to the less pressing issues and address that. And I do, I did have to get a Lux, and I have to say that. I did have to show water rights, or not water rights, that is addressed. I did have to prove that, and also I had to prove that I wasn't in a flood zone. So contrary to what was presented, that is being addressed by Lux and the DEQ, and you do have to prove it. And they do come out and inspect and make sure that you are in compliance. So that's about it. Thank you.
I have a quick question. So just by virtue of having to get a Lux, you're not a medical grower, you're a recreational grower.
That's correct.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
But
anyone else?
Just in regards to that, it's all medicine. You can label it recreational. You can label it medical.
We're
you
not.
Can label it whatever you want.
Yep.
It's medicine.
Okay. We're not debating that today. Mr. Hart.
Thank you. For the record, Bob Hart, land use consultant here in Southern Oregon. I submitted a written testimony Friday, 10 pages or 11, but I'd like to go over some high points that I think really need to come out, because this whole thing, the devil is in the details. The prohibition in RR1, 2.5, and those less than 5, I think can be mitigated to an extent with the new micro tier 1 limitations that the state has recently put into effect. Indoor grows could be like 625 feet, not much more than a garage. Outdoor grows 2,500 square feet, less than 6% of a 1-acre parcel. So I think that would mitigate some of those issues. In the rural residential zones, there is a setback for agricultural structures, and that was to try and mitigate impacts. And I think the plant setback to those agricultural setbacks is appropriate, try and protect it. But in the resource zones, it just takes away area that not necessarily going to be next to houses. So I think the setbacks for plants in the resource zones is not appropriate. The same way I feel about fences in the resource zones. It says that you have to set fences back 30 feet. What that's going to do is bring rise to property line problems in the future, because most people say, well, the property line's along the fence. If you're requiring fences to be set back 30 feet, you're going to have conflicts of where property lines really are in the future as people move away from it. So I think the setback issue on fences really needs to take a lot more work. As far as enforcement, that was a major part of the presentation. I think that needs to be set aside as a separate issue from the marijuana rules and regulations, because there's a lot of other things that need to come in, like odor control. When you read the details of the report, it's proposed that in all cases an engineer's report be submitted. but there are some standards. I know they adopt them in Jackson County. It seems to be working of a certain volume and a certain type of system is an acceptable requirement. And if you put it in that way, you don't have to go out and hire another engineer and just drive up the cost. One of the things, it's a minor point, but serpentine zone, it's not a residential zone, and it has the same limitations and restrictions as a actual residential zone. I think it's a non-resource, so there needs to be some accommodation for that. As far as impervious surface, I think this is a solution looking for a problem. I don't think that there's a lot of issues out in the rural area. If this was an urban area where you have approaching 50% impervious surface on a lot, then there would be issues that need to be addressed. But I don't think it needs to be addressed here in the rural area. One last thing on fences. I saw pictures, and I think we need a definition of what a real fence is. And it has to be something that is more substantial than some black plastic. But I don't see in here a definition of a fence. So that needs to be defined. And one of the things, being from Southern Oregon, everybody's pretty independent, and I've seen it happen, especially along the river corridor. When you start talking about paint and certain colors on things mandated in a code, it takes away a real property right that I don't think is necessary here. It's substituting one person's judgment for another, because there's nothing, if you have a real fence, that a certain color would have to be just an overburdened thing. One thing I would ask you to do as you review these things with your legal counsel is to look at the Dolan decision of a takings, and also look at Measure 49, because if you reduce property values by new regulations, the county would be liable for compensation to those property owners. And property values are changing dramatically because of this whole thing. I've got one last thing to say here is the matter before you today is a change that no one could have anticipated just a few years ago. I'm of the opinion that this is a transition period and the industry will evolve over the next few years. As I see the proposed ordinance, there's some major changes that need to be addressed and some minor ones. I just hope you take time. Thank you.
Yep. I think that's what we will do, is take time. Gentleman in the back. So we're going to take a break right after you get done.
Sure. My name is Riversong. I'm just a simple peasant farmer from Applegate.
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
What was your name again, please?
My name is Riversong. I'm a peasant farmer in Applegate. So there's a lot here. I'm just going to cut to the chase. I encourage you guys to flex whatever power you can to address the major issues. With all appreciation to the people taking care of their land, I know people who took care of the land, dug giant holes, and used them in landfills for 20 years, and then people buy the land, they have this landfill under their house they didn't even know about. That's Oregon land use. So a lot of people jumping on the commercial bandwagon who don't know how to grow, don't know how to steward land. Many of them are from the cities, and they're not all of them, but many are coming from the cities, and they don't know how to use a trash can. They put all their trash in a rural neighborhood, like in Williams. I know three houses like that. A bunch of young kids, 15 kids at one site, trash all over the land. The dogs are coming. They blame the neighbors for not taking care of their dogs. They don't even know how to use a trash can. These people need inspectors to come through and help them set up their gardens. No, you can't just dig holes and then not take care of the water and build a proper culvert. You know, half-assed contractors who don't do their jobs correctly and don't make the roads after they put in electrical systems, and then the road's flooding out. The contractor's nowhere to be seen. The grower doesn't even live there, and they're in Hawaii. These are some of the problems I've seen in my neighborhoods. Regular mainstream Joes who want to grow a commercial garden in a neighborhood. Big lights all of a sudden. The culverts are all flooded when the rain comes. They cut off three quarters of the tree and leave only the branches over the road. So this summer, when everything cranks, those trees are going to fall all over North Applegate Road, which is the main thoroughfare. I told him, hey, dude, you cut all these trees. They're falling all over the road. He doesn't care. If you don't make legislature that has teeth, people won't care. $1,000 fine is nothing for major violations. You should fine people if they don't follow the rules. give them some time to comply. And if they don't, because they don't care about your fine or $10,000, because they're making $250,000, well, good luck. Okay, that environmental impact. The way the water flows on the land, people just don't even know. Next thing you know, the road's flooded over. So that's serious. You need inspectors, and you need three-part inspections. Where you guys charge a fee. If you're going to have a commercial grow in Josephine County, you need to pay a fee. So an inspector will come out, look at the site, say, yeah, this is kind of some ideas on how you should do it. You can put in this area. Then, boom, the inspector comes from the second part and makes sure everything's right. Boom. So you have inspectors, charge a fee, so you pay for the job. Simple, easy sounds, generator quality. People need good generators, not old, broken generators that fill the whole valley with noise. Fans and motors. See, state, well, I don't want to talk about that. It's terrible. So the three-stage permit, I think that's important. You need inspectors to make sure these people are putting in gardens properly. You need inspectors. It's the only way. If you don't give them a permit to grow, they can't grow until they have a permission. Find a way to do that, because there's a percentage of these people that are destroying the land, destroying the waterways, destroying roads, destroying the neighborhoods, because they don't know any better, and there's no one there to tell them. So if you guys can use your power and the Williams CAC, I'm really happy about that. The CAC, I like that. Hope you guys can all work together to help educate people, because they don't know what they're doing. Thank you.
No applause, please, really, because I don't want it to go the other way. It's just not kind, even if I agreed as well. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back here at 10:45, so about a 10-minute break.